Chapter 3. The Latin Derivative Job. Sherlock felt that did not make him comfortable. He did not like it. He did not want to delete the feeling. He wanted to save it in his permanent memory storage and replay it on a daily basis. That was what made him uncomfortable. Irene rolled the back of her head against the back of Sherlock's. He identified again. The place where she had the slight dent on the back of her skull, 67% probability that this had occurred during the fall when she was less than 1 year old. She was talking again. Let me guess. This is the part where Dr. John Watson would be amazing. She jingled the handcuffs behind her back. Sherlock towed off his, I'm just a gormless tourist, trainers. Nothing said gormless tourist. Better than trainers. He was particularly pleased with the plaid laces. He was Scottish today. Don't be ridiculous. John clearly does not have a clue how to rack even a basic waffle lock. He pulled off his left sock. Irene leaned her head onto Sherlock's shoulder. Sherlock gently lifted her hair and delicately removed a pin from her bun. She said, Careful, love, you'll ruin my do. Sherlock plucked the pin out of his mouth with his foot. After some thought, he scratched his nose with the pin. It had been itching. Per mother's rule on the subject, from the moment that he had been cuffed. He dropped the pin on the mattress and picked it up. He rolled it between his fingers, straightening the wire. He set to work on Irene's cuffs. He paused and smiled, although he would have shot the guards. The recoil of the gun while Sherlock was ejaculating. Normally he thought guns were boring. Even a 9-year-old with a gun could kill, but John... John had recalibrated his expectation. Really? Sherlock could hear the 1,000 pounds of pressure in that really. It did not matter. He did not care. Yes, really. There was a sharp click as the cuffs clicked open. He is really quite extraordinary for an Omega. Irene pulled away from him. She crouched in front of Sherlock. She took his face in her hands and leaned in for a kiss. Sherlock, she breathed against him. I'm an Omega. Sherlock rolled his eyes at her. Yes, but we are perfect for each other. She held up the pin that she'd stolen from him. During the not kiss, no, before. Yes, we are. Absolutely perfect for each other. This time she did kiss him. She tasted like cake. Omega coupling middle notes, oak and mossy notes, with a high note of vanilla. His pulse rate went up by 10% as the oils from her lips were passed into his bloodstream, the highly permeable skin on his own lips. Dull. They had done this experiment before. She whispered against his mouth. I should leave you here. He arched an eyebrow. And how do you plan on leaving? The door is locked. Perhaps we should depend on your ability to convince the guards again. She laughed. Sherlock, she gave him the pin. This is where we're supposed to be. Once he had picked his way free, he put his gormless trainers back on. He set to work on the barred window. He worked the loose middle bar out and climbed out the window. He held out his hand to Irene. John knew he had a bad shoulder, but he'd been completely calm climbing out the window with him. No, not entirely calm. The line of his hard phallus pressed hot against Sherlock's back. He boosted Irene into the air duct that led out over the cell. They crawled up to the next floor. John was not the least bit claustrophobic. If he were, he would not have picked the tree. He had liked the thicket, but not as much as he liked the tree. Sherlock stored this in the relevant table in his memory palace. They worked their way across the crawl space over the heating system. John had called him amazing. Fascinating. Amazing. They paused in El Presidente's office, where Irene made a very excited phone call, claiming to be the Duchess of Queenbury Salmonson, and dropped the phone. One office down, they hacked, if looking at the back of the binder next to the computer for the passwords written on a sticky note could be called hacking. Over their earpieces, Molly sounded disappointed. There was screaming in the background as Johnny Lee Miller was announced for the gumshoe panel. In any case, they hacked their way into the computer of the General of the Western Border and sent a very stern email about the state of repair in the border stations. They stole an office. Irene's invented title went on the door. She held a meeting in which she was very concerned about the theft of antiquities being used to finance terror plots. She had just finished the meeting when the alarm for the tourists caught smuggling antiquities was raised. They backtracked through the air ducts and onto the roof. Sherlock stared out into the abyss. John shot three men with incredible accuracy, while Sherlock was not hitting him. He replayed the recoil of the gun traveling through John's body while Sherlock shuddered in sight of him. Irene snapped her fingers in front of Sherlock's face. "Sherlock, if you tell me about screwing John Watson one more time, I will have to track the poor bitch down and keep him prisoner in my evil lair until you cut it the fuck out." Sherlock snorted. Applying a qualifier such as evil to a lair is meaningless. She stared at him. She arched an eyebrow. She smiled. "I'll borrow the bakery from Miss Hudson. She's a dear. She'll let me. For a good cause." She paused. "Did you forget something?" "Don't be ridiculous." "Entirely ridiculously correct." This was John's fault. This was Sherlock's fault for not properly reorganizing the tables and rows and columns and cells of John in his memory palace. She looked down at the drop to the yard below. Redundant. She had already made her point. No reason to rub it in like that. Sherlock glared at the betrayingly, utterly dull drop. He did not think about John as he crawled through the tight, narrow ventilation ducts, the sheets from the bed. He did not think about him as they slid down the knotted sheets to the courtyard below. He did not think about him as they strolled arm in arm through the crowd of tourists. He did not think about him when Irene shouted, "I see them! Over there!" He did not wonder if John spoke any Spanish. He concentrated on the power of suggestion. The rest of the crowd were soon pointing where Irene had directed them. Sherlock and Irene waited there for at least an hour in the gathering crowd. Arm in arm, they walked away together. She put her head on his shoulder. "Admit it. I really am perfect for you." They had not timed their mutual laughs. It was more of a matter of practice. She put a soporific, "again," in his coffee while they watched Mycroft arrive in a black SUV. Mycroft smiled over El Presidente's hand and said something. Sherlock did not bother reading lips. "Just a minor government official. Blah, dull, blah." He grimaced and drank the coffee. He fell asleep on the balcony. Irene unlocked her mobile and dialed a number that did not exist. "I'm worried about him." Sherlock did not fall asleep. He left the crushed remnants of the pill that she had not slipped in his drink, so like mother to have tried, that he had not drunk on their dresser. She would understand. She really was perfect for him. She could see right through him. He caught a plane. He purchased Omega-centric magazines for further research. If three contained correlated data, he could assume that the information was relevant. He did not go home. He went to London. He walked the streets as the people of that city walked and talked and tumbled out of clubs and bars to head to their next midnight destination. He accessed locations in his memory palace and made a wide circle. He spiraled inward. He worked on the organization of his memory palace. He added new relational tables. He added full indexing. John must be fully indexed. He validated the structure. He eliminated unnecessary foreign keys in the stored procedures to maximize on the speed of response. He paused at a shop window. A small painting made him smile. It made him think of John. Ridiculous. He was in London. John lived in London. There was a 68% probability that a slice of burnt toast would make him think of John. He quickly picked the spool pick resistant lock. He almost took what he wanted without paying, but John would not like that. He left a brief identification of the unidentified Giacometti in the back of the shop, with a suggestion on how to find its provenance. That was a more than worthwhile trade. He circled. His steps grew tighter until he went round the shared garden near John's bedsit one more time, and easily climbed the rainspout. He climbed to John's sad, little, pathetic, horrible, tiny, noxious bedsit. John would be so much happier when he moved in with Sherlock. Would he? Should he? Had they pair bonded? How could Sherlock know? And perched on the sill, he watched John, coupling middle notes, low notes a complex tangle of ambergris, vanilla, and high notes of leather and tobacco, dump a very dull can of soup into a very sad pot on a very boring hot plate. John shouldn't be in such a dull, boring place. Not when he wasn't the least bit dull. John looked up. He didn't flinch, which was the normal reaction when Sherlock did this sort of thing. He smiled a tiny little smile that most people would never have noticed. But, of course, to Sherlock was as bright as the lights in Harajuku in Tokyo. He gestured for Sherlock to come in with one hand. Ah, confirmation of the effect of his time in Southeast Asia. He gestured with his fingers extended down and not up. Cambodia after the tsunami. Don't sit there. You'll scare Ms. McDonald's cat. Sherlock was helpless to resist. He slid down into the dull little room, which was perhaps not entirely dull, because it smelled like soup and summer and John's unique scent. John. Sherlock hadn't actually planned on coming here. Irene had been right. Every part of him wanted to be near John. This did not put him in a good position if his biological necessity was not reciprocated. It would not be the first deleted time. He hadn't actually intended to arrive at this moment. He didn't actually have anything to say. John made his soup. He tasted it. He didn't say anything. Sherlock leaned against the window frame and watched everything that John did. It was very pleasant, that silence. John poured the soup into two bowls. Sherlock said, "I'm not hungry." He was never hungry. Hungry was something for the people who were controlled by their bodies, and Sherlock was controlled by his mind. Except that once with John. Except that once that had been deleted from Sherlock's memory banks, and then an algorithm had been run to overwrite any trace of that memory with other memories, which had also been deleted and overwritten, and in repetition to the 20th time, and John stirred the pot. So, I don't know if you remember during my heat, but you should know there shouldn't be any consequences from what happened. Sherlock stared at him. John was babbling. Of course there were consequences. They were they? This was not his area. Pair bonded. Sherlock couldn't stop thinking about it and replaying the memories and pausing and rewinding and wondering what John was doing right that moment. Never even crossed your mind, did it? Yeah, never mind. John went back to stirring the pot. Crossed his mind? He'd replayed that moment over and over. The disappointment that had crashed as John told him that Sherlock wasn't breeding him. The disappointment that they wouldn't be connected through the rest of time, or until they died, and would have no way of knowing what came later, no matter what occurred between them. John put the bowls on the very dull little table next to the very dull sink. The window was too far away from John. Sherlock sat across from him, but he wasn't going to eat. He wasn't hungry. His stomach growled, which was just his body being unruly and not doing what it was told, and perhaps a spoonful of soup since John had made it. The magazines had indicated that the first time an Omega prepared a meal for there. Was that what this was? Alpha was an important step in their relationship. It tasted better than he expected. It had an unusual taste. He could have sworn he'd seen everything that John put in the pot, but he didn't recognize a flavor. It eluded him. He took another sip. He could have asked, "What is that?" He could have gotten up to see what John had on his shelf. However, that would be cheating. He should be able to tell from the taste. He took another spoonful. He swished it around in his mouth before swallowing. John smiled a very tiny, infinitely small smile. It was lights running up and down the Empire State Building in New York. It was New Year's on the Eiffel Tower. "You did that on purpose. You put in an extra spice. When? When did you do it?" He should have been worried that John had drugged him, but clearly that was an issue for John. He made a note of it in the John Primary Index and John Dislikes table. John paused with his spoon of soup almost all the way up to his lips. He said, He swallowed up another spoonful of soup. Since John was fully indexed, seeing John put a spoon in his mouth made Sherlock think of his simulation of John putting Sherlock's phallus in his mouth, which wasn't a simulation he should be running right now. Sherlock stopped the stored procedure that had been running without his command sequence to initiate it. "I'm a highly functioning sociopath." If they were going to pair bond, it was important that John understood the worst of him. "I also play the violin at all hours. Sometimes I don't speak for days." He resisted emphasizing that he was very highly functioning. Very highly functioning. As Mummy had been before him. John smiled confusion at him and kept eating his soup. He did not call him a freak and tell him to leave. He should have. He could have. But John did not. He reinitiated the sequence to identify the spice in the soup. Sherlock had almost eaten the rest of the soup when he realized it was paprika. Ha! Paprika. Yeah, it's in adobo sauce. John ate another spoonful. He pushed the bowl of soup away. He felt that made him uncomfortable. He stood up. He made a very brief circumference of the very tiny room. His batteries were quite low. It would be fine if he stopped for a little while. He'd already told John the worst. He turned up the collar on his coat and collapsed on John's bed. It smelled like John, which was very nice. It was very, very nice. John laughed. "Make yourself at home." He observed John in his appallingly horrific patterned sweater. It smelled like wet wool, which made sense in that it was wool, and John had come home from a double shift at the completely dull clinic, and it had been raining, and John hadn't brought a coat, and his umbrella was inadequate. His back was wet. John's back. John got up. He washed dishes. He plugged in the kettle. It was very dull and domestic. "No tea for me." Sherlock closed his eyes. Opened his eyes some time later. John was not in bed next to him, which was not much in the way of a deduction. But he couldn't make bricks without straw. He looked over the side of the bed. John was curled up on the floor on a couple of towels under a blanket. That would not do at all. He looked cold. Sherlock draped his jacket on top of him. He was so far away. The magazines had been very clear that the 24 hours after sharing a heat were the most critical. It had been 97 hours since John had shot 3 men. Well, Sherlock felt the recoil into the middle of him. What if Sherlock had waited too long to reinforce their bond? Unacceptable. Restart sequence. Sherlock rolled off the bed and made his way under the blanket next to his pair bond. Yes, maybe. Sherlock ached. He snuggled next to John. That did not seem quite enough. He fit his head over John's, and wrapped his arm around John's waist, and put his leg over John's legs, and breathed in. John smelled even more like John than his bed did. Which made sense, as he was the source of all Johnness in the world. The only source of Johnness, which was somewhat disturbing when Sherlock considered all the individuals in the world. There were, of course, many favorable genetic matches for every genetic variation, but there was only one John, who would fire a gun while Sherlock was... This was recursive. He needed to stop focusing on a single isolated incident and analyze the totality. John had stabbed a man with a fork, and after the fight checked that man's pulse, he'd hit Grunner with an owl, symbolic in Western art of wisdom and insight. He'd shot three men while stop, recursive, he needed new data. John mumbled in his sleep. His posterior moved against Sherlock's phallus, which responded by engorging with blood, rushing to be closer to John. John's legs fell apart, opening himself for Sherlock. Sherlock tasted his neck in small, tiny licks. According to the Marie Claire and Teen Omega, classic scent marking behavior between paired couples. How could he be sure they were a pair? This was not his area. John rumbled, good, in his sleep, and rolled onto his back. Question, answer. Even in his sleep, John knew the answer. Sherlock unbuttoned John's Jim Jam top. He licked his way up as he pushed aside the fabric, observing facts with his tongue, tiny, quick, short licks. John wasn't cold now. He shifted restlessly. Sherlock pulled off his own shirt. It was in the way. He got rid of his trousers and pants. John had taken off his shoes while he was sleeping. A brief rush of warm, liquid emotion in his center. Were those shots still echoed? He'd analyze it later. He scent-marked against John, who mumbled, "What? You taste like tobacco." Was it too soon to ask if John would bond with him? Perhaps he should ask. Maybe he should ask if John wanted to have sex. Was that the polite thing that normal people did? Was John normal? Sherlock would go slowly, and if John said no, he'd tear himself away and wait in the wardrobe until time ended. Sherlock pulled down John's Jim Jam bottoms. John lifted his hips to help. John's phallus waved free. Sherlock could see it, 63% aroused, in the dim street light. John mumbled, "Oh." Sherlock tasted and rubbed his way back up. Everything was unhurried. He was filled with a dark, safe feeling that the car, hybrid, Toyota Prius Gen 1 by the engine, motor sound, going down the street was infinitely far away. Sherlock slid off of John. "What? No." Sherlock pushed John onto his side. Sherlock explored John's shoulders, the tiny V where his hair ended at the base of his neck. John's spine was slightly out of alignment. He'd have to straighten that later. Later, while he scent-marked John bricolage, just his lips, no hands. While he rubbed against him in small, tiny movements that made the hairs on their bodies catch and give way. They rubbed their oils together into a blend. He would have to take samples. If he could make this blend, if he could feel this way any time. Irrelevant. Half of the blend was rubbing in front of him. He had the source. He began to play John as he might play his violin, both hands moving in coordination towards a goal. A release. He slid his fingers down John's back. He teased at his opening. It was wet. Not wet like heat. Ridiculous overproduction of bodily resources. "Oh," was John's response. It was only a kindness. To slip a finger inside the wet, tight heat. As he explored Martelle. Almost rapid enough, in and out, to be a martellato. John shuddered. He slid another finger in and repeated the experiment. The same response. He became absorbed in his research. in studying John's reactions. He tried a third finger. An improved result. It was fascinating, but it made it hard to press his entire body against John's back. He wrapped his hand around John's phallus. He slid his fingers, played multiple octaves with John's response. He pulled his fingers out, détaché. John whispered, no. John pressed back against him. He must have felt the interest in Sherlock's own embarrassing phallus. Oh. They moved against each other. Sherlock's phallus slid between the hot, slick space of John's thighs. It felt amazing. It felt wonderful. He made a ring of his index and thumb and slid up and down John's phallus at the same time. John's right hand was wrapped around his. He could smell them mingling together. John whispered, please. The firm round curve of his posterior pressed up against Sherlock. He was asking for what Sherlock craved like an addict. Sherlock had been, would always be an addict. He knew what it felt like. Sherlock swallowed. He'd always envied betas and omegas, had felt ridiculous at the size of alpha genitalia, which was simply unnecessary. But as Sherlock pushed into John, he felt nothing but contentment, happiness at the way John cried out, oh God, that's your perfect, at the way John's body tightly held Sherlock. Sherlock rocked slowly. Each time he glissandoed up, John answered in cries. Each time he moved slow and lure out, until only his tip was still inside. He lightly fretted John's phallus with his fingertips. John responded in a higher pitch. Sherlock tasted. It wasn't a kiss, it was a taste. John's neck and slid slowly in again so he could hear John's deepening notes. After some time of this odd, he couldn't calculate the time. He realized that he was humming. A low rumble like a very large lion or tiger. More analysis needed, and a recording. Cat. He went on for some vibrato time. He did not even really notice when it sped up. It happened so slowly. They spent such a long time moving in a legato. And then without any perceptual change, Sherlock's hips were slapping staccato against John, his hand staccatissimo on John's phallus. He felt time speed up. All of time was focused white and falling to a single point, onto a single note. His back curled as his nervous system played the final chord. As his brain went entirely white, he was crying out, "Ew!" He couldn't stop it. Interesting. When his system reset from its total system failure, he lay next to, inside John, for a very long time. As he softened, he slipped out. He sighed at the loss. John breathed out. That was fantastic. He sat up. Come on, up, bed. He rubbed himself clean with one of the towels. He batted Sherlock away, playful. He was comfortable at play with Sherlock. As Sherlock attempted to nuzzle John between his legs, the smell of John, the smell of sex. John got under the sheets. Sherlock followed him. Sherlock moved him until they were properly arranged, until his arm was over John's chest and his leg was threaded through his legs. Sherlock did not fall back asleep. He lay there for a very long time, completely failing to analyze what had just happened. That should have bothered him. 1 + 1 equaled John. Incorrect, correct. They were a pair bond. Question, answer. John's responding notes in the dark, but he was too busy breathing the scent from John's neck. After all of that, he should have had sufficient samples of John's taste, but for the rest of the night he took new samples for later analysis. He waited as long as he could. His phone was vibrating. He had a job to do. He wanted, ached to stay where he was. He got up and dressed. He placed the painting where John would see it. He took one more sample from John's lips before he left. 5. He took 5 samples. ever more hopeful for John's eyes to open. John's eyes were fluttering open. Amazing. He rolled over onto his front. A lovely offer, but Sherlock really did need to go. Sherlock took just one more. 8. He took 8 taste samples. And left the way he'd arrived.